Welcome to Tori Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yechezkel Perek Mem, Chapter 40. Our last section, Chapters 38 to 39, describe the miraculous apocalypse of the War of Gog from Magog, which, according to the Gemara, ushers in the Messianic Age. Now, we begin our last section of Sefer Yechezkel, which will cover the last nine chapters, 40 through 48, which are Yechezkel's vision of the rebuilt Beit HaMikdash and his future vision of what Yerushalayim rebuilt could look like. We start. Ve'esrim shana legalutenu barosh hashana ve'esor lechodesh bar abasre shana achar asher hukta ha'ir ve'etzem hayom hazeh hayta alai yad Hashem ve'yevei oti shama. This nevuah is going to take place in the 25th year of our captivity, meaning 25 years since the exile, Galut Yehoyachin, in the beginning of the year, on the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after that city was struck, meaning 25 years since Galut Yehoyachin and 14 years since the Chorban. On that same day, the hand of Hashem was on me, says Yechezkel, and he brought me there. There, being Yerushalayim to the Makom HaMikdash. Dr. Tova Ganzel points out that it is significant that this perek has two dates. One counts from the time of the exile of Yehoyachin, the year that Yechezkel himself was exiled, and the other, for the first time, counts from the Chorban, the year the city was struck. This change in the nature of Yechezkel's counting is significant, as it points out how affected Yechezkel and the Jews of the Galut were over the loss of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. It is with this loss of the Beit HaMikdash that frames this nevuah that we are about to begin, which is Yechezkel's vision of the rebuilt Beit HaMikdash, a vision that will last for the next few prakim. And Yechezkel starts in Pasuk Bet, B'mar'ot Elokim Haviani El Eretz Yisrael, in this vision of God, in this prophetic vision, I was brought to the land of Israel, V'yinecheni El Har Gavoa Ma'od, and Hashem placed me down on a very high mountain, V'alav Kimivne Ir Minegev, and on it was the frame of a city towards the south. Yechezkel now, in a prophetic vision, takes a new journey to Yerushalayim, one that will be very different than the one he took in Prakim Chet through Yod Aleph, 8 through 11. In that trip, in that prophetic vision, he saw all of the terrible sins that Bnei Israel were doing. Each place that Yechezkel would look would reveal another terrible sin and another important person leading other important people in their horrible abominations. That vision, had Yechezkel see and experience the Chorban that was going to happen to the Jews of Yerushalayim while his body remained unable to help in Bavel except just to say what he saw, to tell what's coming, to be the Tzofeh, to be the one who sees the future. This trip is going to be very different. Whereas in his last trip, he saw Hashem leaving the Beit HaMikdash, here he sees Hashem coming back. In his last vision, Yechezkel saw the destruction of the people and the loss of hope, while here he sees the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash and the stirring of a hope anew, even though they were in Galut already for 14 years after the Chorban. While some other people may have given up, Yechezkel the Tzofeh, the lookout, is continuing to look to the future and what could be coming along the bend. He sees in front of him not destruction, but redemption, not languishing in exile, but rebuilding. According to the Radak, the very high mountain that Yechezkel is placed on is none other than Har HaBayit. While Har HaBayit is actually a small mountain, David says in Tehillim, Yerushalayim Harim Savivla, Yerushalayim has great mountains around it, actually a short mountain surrounded by tall mountains, the Radak compares this great mountain to the vision that Yeshayahu has of Har HaBayit at the end of days, where Yeshayahu says in Perek Bet, Pasuk Bet, chapter 2, verse 2, V'haya ba'achrin hayamim, nachon yi'eh har beit Hashem b'rosh haharim. On that day, at the end of days, the mountain of the house of Hashem will be settled at the head of all the other mountains. V'nisa migvaot, it will be higher than the hills. V'naharu elav kol hagoyim, and all the nations will stream up towards it. This is the kind of Har HaBayit that Yechezkel is being brought to. Not Har HaBayit as it was, but Har HaBayit as it will be. Next to the mountain is Alav Kemivneh Ir, Minegev, a city to the south. You notice that there's a distance between the Beit HaMikdash at the top of the mountain and the city, which is lower down towards the south. There's an elevation of the Beit HaMikdash even over the city of Jerusalem. The Radak continues and explains the purpose of this nevuah, and he says, "Lenachem v'nevuah zu Beit Yisrael." This nevuah is to comfort the people of Israel, Asher Galu, who were exiled, ki lo to'avad tikvatam, that they should not lose their hope. Va'od yashuvu el ha'aretz, and they will once again come back to the land, v'yeshvuva, they will live in it, lavetach, with security. U'binyan habayit yeh yoter mima shehaya b'tchila. They're not going to get the Beit HaMikdash back. They're going to get a better Beit HaMikdash than they had in the past. B'nai Yisrael have been in Galut for a long time, 14 years since the Chorban, and another 11 before that, since Galut Yehoyachin. Yechezkel's vision is the opposite of the vision that he had before. While both are extremely specific, and both use the geography of the Beit HaMikdash to make their points, they propose opposite points. The specificity of Yechezkel's journey to Yerushalayim in Perek 8 through 11 was to convince the Jews that he was actually there, and it actually was corrupt. Here, the specificity of the vision is to convince the Jews that they will actually be redeemed. And not only that, their new Beit HaMikdash will be better and bigger than the first. And now, on this high mountain, says Yechezkel in Pasukimel, Vayaveh oti shama, he brought me over to it, v'hinei ish mar'eu kimar'eh nechoshet. And there was a man, and the way that he looked was he looked like copper. He was almost shining. Upatil pishtim biado, and in his hand was a rope of linen, ukinei hamida, and a measuring rod. Vahu omed bashar, and he's standing at the gate. Rashi explains that the linen cord was for measuring the ground, and the measuring stick, the rod, is for measuring the width of the walls. Yechezkel is introduced to a man who will be his guide, who is holding a stick and a linen rope. When we, the reader, hear about the man who, assumingly in this prophetic vision, is an angel, and he's holding a rope of linen, we are thrust back to our last story of Yechezkel's journey, where he also met a man, an angel, wearing linen, material that we noted then was also the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. These two men both perform an act of marking. In Yechezkel's first vision, the man will mark off who is a tzaddik and then destroy everyone else, effectively measuring who is worthy and who is not. While in this vision, the man will measure the proportions of the Beit HaMikdash. These two guides, while seemingly having different jobs, are perhaps mirror images of each other. In Galut, Yechezkel needed to see that the destruction could actually happen in Prakim Chet Riyad Aleph. It was the man in linen who he spoke about could be the representative of the Yechezkel character who showed him that the sanctified space, the Beit HaMikdash, could actually be destroyed. Now, the new man that Yechezkel meets is an architect. He's measuring out the land, demarking the land that beforehand was just whole, was just regular space, but with his measurements, it transformed into sanctified space. In the last vision, Yechezkel is whisked away from these zakenim, these elders that had been coming to see him, and he goes and he sees the corrupt nature of the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim. Here, Yechezkel gives no background as to what he was doing when he suddenly got this vision. However, we do have a hint from the date, which is Berosh Hashanah Be'esor L'Chodesh, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th of the month. There are two explanations for this date. The first we will look at is Rashi, who bases his explanation on the Gemara Erechin 14a and explains that the only time Rosh Hashanah, the new year, is on the 10th of the month is when we celebrate the Yovel, the 50th year of the Shemitah cycle. So this year that Yechezkel is in, says Rashi, is actually the completion of the Yovel cycle. If this is the case, we can imagine Yechezkel, the Kohen, bereft of the two major rituals that he was no longer able to participate in on this day. One, the rituals of Yom Kippur, because it is the 10th of the month, and that is the first day of the Yovel cycle, and that's why it would be called Rosh Hashanah. And the second, the rituals of the Yovel year, where the Kohanim on Yom Kippur would have proclaimed freedom for all of the land. It is at this moment, at the depth of the loss, where they do not have the comfort of the kapara, of the forgiveness of the Yom Kippur rituals, and are very much not free, not in the spirit of Yovel that proclaims freedom. And here they are sitting in Galut, Yechezkel the Kohen, and Hashem takes him on a journey to see what the future could hold, to see the rebuilt Beit HaMikdash. The second interpretation, Berosh Hashanah of Be'asor Lachodesh, is brought by Rav Elezer Mibalgensi, and that is that Rosh Hashanah is actually the month of Nisan, the first month that we use in our counting. And that's the month that Tanakh uses as the first of the year. And therefore, the 10th of that month, the 10th of Nisan, would be an auspicious day, the day that the Korban Pesach was brought by the Jews in Mitzrayim. We can imagine the symbolism of this day to Yechezkel. Here they were in Galut themselves that seemed to be never ending. And then on the day of freedom, Hashem takes Yechezkel to show him that they too will be freed one day and return to their land. This man now turns to Yechezkel and he says in Pasuk Dalet verse 4, Vayedaber elai ha'ish, ben adam, re'ei ve'enecha, ובאזנך שמה, ושים לבך לכל אשר אני מראה אותך. Son of man, see with your eyes, hear with your ears, and place on your heart, think about everything that I'm showing you. כי למען הראותך הווה חובת הנה, because in order to show you this, that's why you were brought here. Hagid et asher ata ro'eh levi Yisrael. You should say what you see to Bnei Yisrael. Yechezkel is told that he's being specifically shown this vision to tell it over to Bnei Yisrael, which the Malbim explains again, kedei lenachem otam, to comfort them, ulechazek yadayim rafot, and to strengthen weak hands. Bnei Yisrael, at this point, are depressed in Galut, and Yechezkel comes to bring them hope. The man then proceeds to take Yechezkel on a tour of the Beit HaMikdash, measuring each part with his instruments as they go. One example is Pasuk Vav, verse 6. V'yavo al-shar asher panav derech ha-kadima, then he came to the gate which looks towards the east. V'ya'al b'malutav, and goes up its steps. V'yamad et saf ha-shar, kane achad, and he measured the threshold of the gate, which was one stick long. Ve'etzaf achad kane achad rachav, and the other threshold was also one reed broad. And then again in pasukhet, vayamad et ulam hashar me'abayit kane achad, he also measured the porch of the gate towards the house, which was one reed long. And then in Pasuk Tet, Vayamad et ulam hashar, shmona amot, he measured the porch of the gate, which was 8 cubits, va'ulav shtaim amot, and its posts were 2 cubits, va'ulam hashar me'abayit, and the porch of the gate was towards the house. So basically, Yechezkel and this man, this malach, go from the outermost part towards the innermost part, starting from the gate and then moving inward, measuring each piece and getting the exact length and width as they go, the man measuring and Yechezkel following. It seems that with such a detailed measurement, the Jews at the time of Bayit Sheni, who haven't gone back yet, but will in the time of Koresh, which we will read about in the book of Ezra, it seems that they would have tried to follow exactly these measurements that the man told Yechezkel. Bayit Sheni, however, was more based on the structure of Bayit Rishon than it was on this vision. The Rambam writes in Hilchot Beit HaBechira, chapter 1, Halacha 4, that the design of the structure built by King Solomon is described explicitly in the Book of Kings. In contrast, the design of the Messianic Temple, though mentioned in the Book of Yechezkel, is not explicit or explained. Thus, the people in the time of Ezra built the Second Temple according to the structure of Solomon, including certain aspects which are explicitly stated in Yechezkel. So meaning that the people of Bayit Sheni, the Jews that came back to Israel, they basically followed the template of buy it, reshown to the best of their ability, according to how much money they had. And then they added in certain aspects from the vision in Yechezkel in order to fulfill the visions when they could. But really, the visions in Yechezkel were too difficult to follow and too ephemeral, not really explained in a way that they could follow it. And therefore, says the Rambam, Yechezkel is really the design of the Messianic Temple, or Bayit Shlishi, the third Beit HaMikdash. And Abarbanel writes in his introduction to the Perek, the sages of blessed memory said about this prophecy that this section will be expounded by Elijah, by Eliyahu HaNavi. This means that we do not know how to expound or interpret it properly, as it concerns future matters related to the measurements of the building, its parts, the sacrifices, and other elements which God alone knows how they will be. These matters are not clear to us, and if we were to interpret them based on our reasoning, it would not be appropriate to rely on such an interpretation. It's ironic that a parak that has so many specific measurements is actually so hard to understand, so much so that the Jews of Bayit Sheni mostly did not follow it, and many of the commentators even have a hard time explaining it. Like the mountain of Har Bayit that stands higher than the other mountains in this vision, even though in reality it's a rather low mountain, the picture that Yechezkel gives the Jews of the Beit HaMikdash is both clear and opaque at the same time, both real and an aspiration. There are specific measurements that seem to be clear, but when you chart them out, they're actually very hard to follow. The specific measurements, though, do lend a realness to the time period that Yechezkel is describing, and they give hope to the people in Babel that the Beit HaMikdash will actually be built. But at the same time, this specific vision of the Beit HaMikdash did not come true in their lifetimes. This parak of Yechezkel can also give hope to all Jews living in the later Galut that the actual measurements of Yechezkel, the one that the Abarbanel says Hashem alone knows exactly what they will be, that they will come true not in their lifetime, but in our lifetimes. And while Elio explains exactly what they mean, we will be enjoying the expansiveness and beauty that Yechezkel the Tzofeh prophesied many years ago. Thank you for learning together, Le'ilu Nishmas Barbara Atlas Brachabas Avraham. She was a beacon of light to all who knew her. Barbara's kindness and generosity had no bounds.